So as you heard me say, it's Christ the King Sunday, and when I start thinking about kings, sometimes I think about some of the monarchs of world history, and one that might be memorable or infamous in some ways would be King Louis XIV of France. He was renowned, he was known, he was a strong leader, and even though he was somewhat short, not all that handsome, he had one thing going for him. He had confidence in himself, maybe even too much confidence in himself. And so he used that confidence in himself to consolidate power, to really rule France with an iron fist. And not only was he a competent ruler, but he wanted to be the best. Not necessarily that people loved him, but that he was the strongest and greatest ruler, kind of unparalleled to all the other kings. He did many things. He was a patron of the arts. He assembled lots of artwork. He built great libraries and collected books. He built Versailles Palace. If you're not familiar, it took 35,000 artisans and laborers over 30 years to complete. He immersed himself in opulence. Greatness was not a word for him. He wanted to be more than great. He wanted to be glorious. And he also wanted to take all the power for himself. He quickly stripped most of the French nobles of their power and boldly proclaimed, maybe you've heard this saying before, but he was the one who was coined as saying, "I am the state. I'm the one in charge." Now, he still wanted to rub elbows with people, so he'd invite these nobles without any political power to kind of rub elbows with and hang out with, but they didn't have any ability to do anything like legislate, and he would then bribe them and give them favors to break ties with lesser nobles and lesser people, and really, essentially what that did was fracture his connection with the people of France itself. He wanted all the power, and he got it. And he ruled for many, many years. But like all human rulers, it must come to an end one day. And as he realized his time was coming to an end in 1715, at the age of 72, he knew it was time to prepare for the end. And so he scheduled a meeting with the bishop of Paris. His name was Bishop Massillon. And he said, "I want to leave my final instructions so that I leave and still leave an impression." So he had made a decision that he would be buried in a golden casket, and that the funeral service would be in Notre Dame in Paris, and that when the service was held, there were to be no light, no candles, nothing lit in Notre Dame itself except for one candle above the golden casket, so that the light from the candle would radiate off the casket, and one last time, people would be awed at King Louis XIV, even in his death. Well, as it so happened, he did die, and thousands gathered for his funeral at Notre Dame. There was a golden casket, and there was a candle lit above it, and as the bishop came in, who was presiding over the service, he walked down the aisle and he began to speak, and he reached down and he snuffed out that candle, and he was quoted as saying, "Only God is great." A reminder to us that human power comes and goes, and human power, when it consolidates, tends to corrupt itself. The Bishop of Paris reminded everyone in attendance that there's only one who is great, and it is God. Human royalty, those who are in political power, aren't known for their humility. That's too human. Too common. Kings and leaders have parades and entourages and riches and palaces and big homes, and the focus is always on them. And you might think to yourself, well, here in the United States, We don't live under a monarch, but we certainly have rulers. And those who want to be in charge and draw attention to themselves. And I know it might be difficult to imagine in this country living under a monarch because we live in a republic. But I want to remind you this morning that this is a day that we kind of look forward, look to the future. And this is a reminder that living under a monarch is in our future. One day we will no longer vote on stuff, whether it be at a congregational meeting. I know you love doing that. All those in favor say aye, right? Or we vote for the candidate of our choice, or out here, which is something new for Rachel and I over the past few years, is studying on all the propositions so we know which, whether we're going to vote for the proposition or not. One day that will all be over because we will live under a king who will be our leader forever, one who is not like human kings or queens, but one who is described as being full of grace and truth, that one day he will return to fix what was broken by us. And all you have to do is watch the news, and you can see humanity does a pretty good job at breaking stuff. And so today we are reminded of that there's a period where human time will end and eternity will begin. And these stories in the New Testament, and there's many of them, even this section that Scott read for us in Matthew 25 is called the Olivet Discourse, meaning Olivet was the mount he was on, where he's talking about what happens at the end, and there's lots of stories about it. And that when he reads these and tells these stories, that business as usual will come to an end. And yet here we are 2,000 years later, and people are still waiting for his return. We say it in our creeds, we believe it, there's no doubt about that. And when I was thinking about this, there's really kind of two sets of people within the Christian church when you start talking about the end, that you have kind of two extremes. On one hand, you have a group of people who do nothing but are preoccupied with the book of Revelation. And anytime there's a major event in history or a weather event, they go, aha, that's pointing to the end times, it's close. Kind of the left behind group of people. And then on the other hand, and this is an image of another parable in that same section that we heard from today in Matthew 25, of the 10 bridesmaids. 5 had their candles ready for when the groom came late, and the other 5 weren't prepared at all. That the 5 that weren't prepared are kind of like, well, after 2,000 years, if he's not coming back, he probably won't. And those are the extremes. And I would say to you that we should avoid the extremes. We shouldn't spend all of our time preoccupied with the end times, nor should we give up the idea that Christ has made a promise to us that he will keep, that one day he will come and restore all things and make all things new. So it's in this context that we hear this reading, which for some people might strike some trepidation. You hear that Jesus says in a parable, a story, that the Son of Man, one who is like us but not like us, will return, and that he is a king with a capital K, and that he will sit on his throne, which is kind of really a fancy way of saying he is in charge, and that he will spend some time separating people. And he uses the imagery, separating the sheep from the goats. As if there's kind of two types of people in the world. There are sheep people and there are goat people. Goats, by the way, who are the ones on the king's left side. Goats in real life like to do their own thing. They don't really pay attention to what's going on, and whatever they want to do, they do. And sheep, on the other hand, prefer to stay connected and in a flock. Just that's goat and sheep behavior. And somehow in this story, the goat people were concerned with doing their own thing and not at all worried about the plight of those who struggled. The sheep people, on the other hand, well, they did things for people in various ways, people who were struggling. They did a bunch of different things. But as the story unfolds, both groups were surprised to find out that Jesus was present with the most vulnerable people. In other words, the sheep people, they didn't just help others because they thought Jesus was watching. You know, we better behave, he's watching over us, kind of like a Santa. No, they did it because it was the compassionate thing to do. They weren't doing it because they thought Jesus was watching over their shoulder, that he was one of the people who were struggling in that group of people. They did it because they knew it was the right thing to do. But the goat people, they were equally as surprised that when the king talked to them, that he had slipped in among the most vulnerable people. I mean, it was as if they were saying, these goat people, well, we love you, King Jesus, and we follow you. And what do you mean we never saw you in need? Because if we did see you, we certainly would have helped you. We would have made sure you had health care. We would have made sure you had food vouchers. We would have made sure you had clothing and subsidized housing. We would have visited you. But we didn't see you, so we didn't do it. And then Jesus replies with the well-known words, at least if you're in the church often, I will tell you the truth, whoever did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do it for me. Okay, so you know the gist of the story. I mean, you heard Scott read it, and every time I hear this story, I kind of do this like self-evaluation. Which group am I in? I mean, maybe you don't do that, but I do that. And so first thing I want to say absolutely publicly, I'm like, oh, I'm a sheep. Totally a sheep. And then this voice in the back of my head starts to say, are you really sure you're a sheep? So, okay, and so I have a kind of a moment of truth, and I look into the spiritual mirror, and I really see that I'm a goat. It's true. I'm a goat. Now you know. I mean, even on a good day, I might even say to myself, well, I'm not completely a goat, but I'm certainly not a sheep. Maybe I'm a hybrid, like I'm a geep or a shote. I mean, I'm not all sheep, I'm not all goat, I'm somewhere in between. And I'd like to think that there's hope for me because I'm not totally a goat. But then I think about it some more and I realize that actually I'm just a goat wearing a wool sweater. So I don't know what to do when I hear stories like this, especially when I looked up the fact that sheep-goat hybrids are very rare, so that it's probably not really a possibility. And goats must have had just as bad a reputation in Jesus' time if he's calling the bad people goats. And he puts them on their left hand, and I just realized that I'm a left-handed goat. I mean, I'm actually left-handed. So this does not bode well. I will wave to you from down below one day, right? That's, you know. What? Tell us. Oh, Rachel means you. You're a sheep. So it's the divine lots have been cast. So you married a goat. How about that? Just think about that. As your pastor, I'm like a junior shepherd to the great shepherd, and I just admitted that I'm a goat. But I struggle with this story because all of a sudden I'm trying to think to myself, is Jesus saying there's only two types of people in the world? Good people and only bad people. I'm like, well, I don't know if I qualify. And then I think about what Paul says. St. Paul, who wrote this letter to the church in Rome, he says this. He says, for all have sinned, and all fall short of the glory of God or the perfection of God. And yet all are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that came by Christ Jesus. I mean, I like this better. Everybody's in the same boat. Everybody's a goat. And that we are accepted as a gift from God through the death and resurrection of Jesus. That Jesus is so loving that through a gift, we're just accepted. But Jesus says, some of us are this and some of us are that. And some of the old Calvinists, if you don't know what that means, don't worry about it, look at this passage and say, see, Double predestination is real. Some people are going to heaven and some people are going to hell. It's just the way it is. But I'm not a Calvinist. I'm a Lutheran, through and through. This is a Lutheran church, right? Okay, yeah, just making sure. So I can't help but go to say, well, let's think about what Luther would say. And of course, Luther has something to say. He says, Christ regards as righteous those who acknowledge themselves as sinners and grieve over their sins, but he condemns those who think they are righteous. So the translation of this, the goats are the sheep, and the sheep are the real goats. Isn't that interesting? It's only those who admit that they're goats that they actually have the possibility of becoming sheep one day. And those who are convinced they are as pure as white wool, well, they're fooling themselves, and they're the goats. Matter of fact, it's not very often that Martin Luther, he's pretty serious, pretty straightforward. He doesn't use sermon illustrations very often, but in his book on the commentary to the book of Romans in the New Testament, he writes a commentary for every book of the Bible. He actually uses a sermon illustration, which I think is wonderful. And he says, it's similar to the case of a sick person who believes the doctor who promises that there will be a recovery in their future. The doctor comes and says, you are going to get better, but in the meantime, you need to do this and that, or kind of doctor's orders, or stay away from that, and this will help your recovery, and you just stay away from the things you shouldn't be doing. So the doctor's orders. So he says, so in that way, in no way hinder the promised return to health or sickness until the doctor can fulfill the promise. So then Martin Luther asked the question, he said, so is this person sick or is that person well? And he says, well, they're both. Sure, they're still suffering from something, but with the promise of the doctor saying, if you do these things, you are most certainly going to get better, you eventually will find that you are cured. I'm like, oh, okay. And so it seems really counterintuitive in this story, but the first step to becoming a sheep is to admit that we're goats. And there's no way that a sheep can become a goat, because here's why. I looked this up, did my little science lesson. Goats have 60 chromosomes, and sheep only have 54. So you can't become the other without some help. So all we have from Christ is the promise that one day we can become sheep. And you know what? It's as if we are both sheep and goats. Because I was thinking about this in the context of this story, kind of at the end of time, at the final judgment. One day, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the great shepherd of the sheep, the very Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world, will separate the sheep from the goats, but not externally, but from within us. That the goats residing in our soul one day will be purged. And one day all that will be left is a little lamb leaping for joy because we are so loved by that great shepherd. So don't be afraid or don't hear judgment in this story today. It is a story of great promise for us as Christians to be the children of God that one day will no longer be goats, but the little lambs of God. Amen.